First of all, I want to say hi to the listeners out here today. I want to welcome my partners, Ricky Hampton and Michael Roberson. I just want to say hello to everyone.
Mike hasn't
checked in yet, but... How you doing there, sir? How are you, Ricky?
I am doing fantastic, man. Looking forward to having a conversation with our guest, Mr. Jackson, today.
Should be a good show. You feeling pretty good
Absolutely.
Today? What do you think about some of the stuff that's been going on the last few days in the league, the NBA?
Well, man, my Pistons got blowed out the other day. But that's all right. They got 5 in a row before they took that L to the Thunder. They just didn't shoot the ball well. I'm still pleased with the direction they're going, man. And I think Dwayne Casey, I mean, that's the reason that guy was Coach of the Year last year, Derek, because this is essentially the same team that Stan Van Gundy had last year. And, you know, in Stan's defense, this was an injured team last year. You know, Blake Griffin is healthy and bouncing around. Reggie Jackson's healthy. And Andre Drummond, you know, keeps working on his game and keeps getting better. But what I do see the difference from Andre is he's giving the sustained effort on a consistent basis. And I don't know if he did that all the time last year. And I credit Dwayne for that.
Yeah, it looked like all the guys, they look happy. It looked like they bought into his system. I've said that a few times. It makes the difference between wanting to show up every day. And I think they can keep it up. As long as, I think Stanley Johnson's been playing well the last few games.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, anytime you get the production from the bench, that's what it takes. It's a 15-man night. Today you have 15 players. You have 12 dressed. But it takes for all 15 for you to have a successful unit. And it looks like that's what they're doing right now. And I think it's something that they can continue through the rest of the season.
Yeah. And I think we have been joined by our good friend Michael Robertson, and we have our guest on the line, too. So I'll let you take it from here, Derek.
How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing fine, Derek. How you doing?
I'm good. Well, welcome to the show. We're going to go ahead and get started. And I want to introduce how you doing, everyone out there. First of all, I want to tell you, you can check out my two partners, Michael and Ricky's show, at the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. These gentlemen have a show that goes on every Tuesday evening. It's a fantastic show. I've been very fortunate to participate in it, and I hope it's something that everyone out there start checking out on a regular basis. I want to introduce a friend of mine, a former teammate of mine. This gentleman is from New Orleans, Louisiana, from Walter Cohen High School, and he's a product of the Georgetown, the legendary Georgetown Hoyas, a very good friend of mine. This gentleman won undrafted, played 13 years in the NBA, and the great thing about him is he also has a bachelor's degree in finance to put that with his basketball career. So I want to say hello to Jaren Jackson Sr. How you doing, sir?
Hey, how you doing, teammate, man? I'm doing all right, man. Doing just great, man. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jaren. I have my two partners on here wanting to say hi to you. They're fans as well, so I want to welcome you to the show. Go ahead, Ricky.
What's up, Darren? How you doing, man? I used to live in New Orleans. I lived in Metairie. So
I know
all about your career, and, hey, looking forward to having a conversation with you today.
I love it, man. I must admit, I miss New Orleans sometimes, man. I miss going back home every now and then, but I think New Orleans would never leave my system, no matter where I am, man. So,
same here, brother. I'm in Detroit now, but New Orleans always got a special place in my heart. The people,
yes,
the food, the music. I mean, come on.
Hey, man, it's a place that I think everybody should visit. I don't know necessarily just spend a lot of time living there. You know, trust me, I grew up there all my life as a young person, but there's so much. There's always some hype going on down there. You could definitely have a good time. You can eat, have a party, drink, whatever you do. You're going to be entertained in New Orleans, you know. So you got to be able to manage your trips down there. But it's a lot of fun, man, and and the memories were everlasting. So,
absolutely.
Compared to Detroit, I don't know if there's any comparison, man. You know, Detroit's a different breed.
Yeah,
Detroit's much different, man. But one, it's cold here. We got snow coming tonight. I mean, you just start right there. But, you know, I love Motown, too. But they're two entirely different cities, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. You come out of Cohen High School, and then you go on and you go to Georgetown and you play from 1985 to 89. You play for a legendary coach there, and I'll let you tell his name. Could you tell us a little bit about your college career?
Oh, man, yeah, so I played for the legendary Coach John Thompson, man. It was a wonderful, wonderful time at Georgetown. I think we all remember our college years, man. It was just a wonderful time, man. 4 years of great basketball, of course, and but I value definitely that the 4 years that it took me to get my my bachelor's degree. So it was some good times, and the legendary coach John Thompson, you know, he will never be forgotten. He was hard nosed. At the time, he was funny, but he's a big guy, and he was very, very successful. And we had some great years, man. I don't know if you can remember back then, man. We beat up on some pretty talented teams back then, you know. So I think today's Georgetown is trying to get back to those days.
You played with some guys that Michael's familiar with as well as Ricky. Now, I know today a lot of our millennials don't keep up with the past, but that was some of the best basketball. You played with guys like Reggie Williams, Michael Jackson, David Wingate, Perry McDonald. I remember Charles Smith you had. And you came off the bench your freshman year. You guys went 24-8. What was the experience like for you to be a rookie, a freshman, and getting your feet wet playing with guys that you surrounded guys with this caliber? How was that for your freshman year?
It was incredible, man. I was a little nervous, I must admit, because when I joined my freshman year, I joined a team that the previous year they lost in the championship game, the memorable game where Villanova beat Georgetown. Everyone remembers that game. You know, it was the biggest upset probably in college history. You know, for a team like Villanova or Raleigh Massimino beating up on Patrick Ewing his senior year, and going down, man, I don't want to say it was a tough time because Georgetown was a success. They had been to the Final Four every year. And so now I come in as a freshman, and we no longer have Patrick Ewing. He moves on to the New York Knicks, and the rest is history for him, of course, as a legendary center in the NBA, but that was just a nervous time. So what was it going to be like for Georgetown without Patrick Ewing? And here comes this little young dude from New Orleans hanging out with some other New Orleans guys like Perry McDonald, Big Jonathan Edwards, guys like that. And then the next year we had Dwayne Bryant, that Georgetown-New Orleans connection that we kind of had during that stretch. But I was nervous, man, playing with Wingate, and those guys were seniors, those guys coming off of winning so much college basketball. Reggie Williams, you mentioned, the Baltimore boy, you know, the movie that was out on 30 for 30. So those guys, man, they brought a lot of memories to me. But I was schooled by those guys. We were running gun. We picked up full court. I don't even know if college ball do that anymore. I don't know if these guys – I don't see that in college today. I don't see any full-court press. I don't see any – I don't see that type of pressure that, you know, Georgetown did back in the day. The likes of – you know, in college, I remember Arkansas with the –
Nolan Richardson.
Teams like this. Nolan Richardson, I mean, who recruited me as well. I mean, I just don't see that type of basketball as much. You know, where guys get up in somebody's face, man. We were tough as nails. You know, Coach didn't play, man. He was your typical you know, he was the guy that always pushed the players to really pick up and do well on defense. That was our motto. And you had to defend, or you, if you didn't, you didn't play. And you can complain all you want. We were deep. If somebody had an issue, he would go right away to another guy that's sitting on the bench, and that person would come in and play defense. So Coach Thompson, as great of a coach he was intense and determined to get the most out of each one of his players. So that's what I remember. But I'm hoping now these millennials understand how great it was to be a Georgetown Hoyer back then. And now I know Patrick, who's now coaching the Hoyers now, I hope he can get back to that point, that Hoyer paranoia that we all remember. So I hope he can get there, you know. So we got some ways to go. But those were some memorable times, Derek, man. And, shoot, man, play defense or you don't play. How about that?
Play defense.
It's Darren. My friend Mike over here. Mike is like the man to me. Mike is the guy who's always got a good question. He travels around. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, Jared. First of all, you and I are around the same age, so I was class 85 also. So Charles Smith, the other Charles Smith, had my dream job. I wanted to be point guard for Georgetown and play for John. But also Pooh Richardson did the same thing for UCLA. I wanted to be a point guard at UCLA. However, I was down at Tennessee State during that time with Anthony Mason. And I tried to be a walk-on, but that's a whole different story. So I was a hooper. but let me get to that time period. You also had John got the honor of being the Olympic coach, and he took Charles with him to South Korea. Now, what was that like, him going over there and them losing and coming back? What was it like your senior year when John came back after that Olympics?
I'll give you all a great story, man. During that time, when John was when he was in South Korea with the Olympic team, I mean, it was great to know that Charles was on the team, and that was an exciting time. The team didn't go as far as they would have liked, but I remember what stands out to me is what happens with the team, the Georgetown basketball team, while Coach Thompson is in South Korea dealing with the USA team. What's going on with the team? So we're back on the campus in D.C. Coach Thompson, who's tough as nails, you know, he's always knowing what's going on. I mean, even over there, he knows where all the players are, making sure we all, you know, stand, you know, concentrate on our summer study. But anyway, we had a moment where it's a funny thing. A lot of the players felt a little bit more freedom, like because coach is away. You know, you can go and play a little bit. You know, guys left town or I don't want to say no one got in trouble, but they were kind of didn't get in. They weren't in the gym as much as they should have been.
Right.
And so when coach found out, man, he let us have it. When he got back from the Olympics, I have never ran so many sprints in my life, Derek. Hey, this is the day when coach decides that there's no basketballs to practice. That's out. There's no you go in the gym, there are no balls. But there's practice. Man, I never ran so many sprints, run around the track out there in the dark in the night. Oh man. This dude practice was sprint. Running miles, get up in the morning. I mean, we went for maybe a week or two, I believe. Without the ball.
Let me update our listeners right fast, just a second, all right? I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight to our Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets podcast. I want to welcome everyone. I'm here tonight with my partner, Ricky Hampton, and Michael Robertson, also from the African American Athlete. You can go to their site, AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. They show every Tuesday night, so please tune in to that. I want to thank everyone once again for listening. We're on the air right now with my friend and former teammate, Jaren Jackson.
Go ahead, Mr. Hampton.
Hey, Jaron. And before we get out of
yes,
here,
sir.
Man, I definitely want to talk about Junior not playing the final minutes of that second half of Michigan State last year. People still talking about that around here, man. Nowhere in the world they lost that game to Jaron. Hey, man, what's bitter
we
about that,
all...
man?
Hey, man. Let me
but
fill
Jaron,
you in, man. It was a.
No, go ahead.
We hear it a lot as well. Jaron Jr. hears it a lot, and we are appreciative during that time. That was a tough stretch. I think Syracuse, like many teams, many college teams, they give them problems with that zone defense, and that was a struggle for the Spartans last year. And it was a struggle for Jaron as well, you know. So I don't want to, you know, as far as the playing time, I wish he would have been on the floor a little more as well. But it's all good, you know. They did their best. Coach Izzo was just great during our time there. It was just a wonderful time. They won the Big Ten. He ends up being Defensive Player of the Year, Freshman of the Year. I mean, he's gotten everything he wants. He didn't get to the Final Four, which was definitely his goal. And it was disappointing, but it was a learning lesson. And you know this, Derek, you're going through your whole career, you have these ups and downs and these moments where you're not going to win all championships. You know, you're just not going to have that. And there's nothing wrong with learning that at an early age. And I know all the fans of Detroit, a lot of Spartan fans, you know, were disappointed. Trust me, I was too. And it was hard for
old
dad to sit up there and watch the green and white, you know, kind of struggle against the Syracuse.
Yeah.
So, but you still
talk
about
our listeners
journey.
Across the country here on Derek Gervin's The Goodest Gets Basketball podcast. What I was mentioning was the NCAA playoffs last year, NCAA tournament when Michigan State was upset, and Jaron Jackson, their best player, dominant kid, Jaron's son. You're probably more famous now for being his dad than the other way around, Jaron.
Right.
But Jaron Jr. Did not only played about 8 minutes in the second half of a game that they ended up losing by 2 points. But you know what? That's neither here nor there. Actually, what I wanted to get to, Jaron, was you talked about Coach taking it out on you guys, making you work hard. But that's the way you played in the NBA. Do you think those lessons at Georgetown helped sustain you through the NBA? As Derek said, you weren't drafted. I think you got cut early in your career, too. And then you go on to play 13 years. What was it that made you persevere through those difficult times that you were just talking about regarding Jaron Jr.?
You know what? Absolutely, man. My work ethic and tenacity – all these different attributes that kind of shapes you as a young player were established at Georgetown and during that time at Georgetown. So it helped me through my career. Yes, I didn't get drafted. Y'all know I didn't get drafted, but once I got to opportunities where I can prove that I belong in the NBA, I remember those days. I remember those moments where I had to run all those sprints, where I had to I didn't have the ball. It wasn't the prettiest time. It wasn't just in the gym shooting jump shots. You had to go to work. And when it got to that point, I really wanted to play in the NBA, so I had to go and prove myself. I got to the NBA, didn't get drafted, trying out for different teams, end up playing in the CBA and playing with Derek. We had a great time in lacrosse, man, having a lot of fun. But we both, like many of the players that we played with, we were all trying to not only win, but to showcase ourselves in hopes of getting an opportunity to get in the NBA and continue your career. And that's what I bought, and that's what I remember. And I took that to the pros. I took that to lacrosse. For those of you guys who don't remember, you know, Derek may tell you this in future broadcasts, if he hasn't said it already. We both were hanging out together in lacrosse playing for the legendary Flip Saunders. And in the minor leagues, many people don't know that. They remember Flip from those Timberwolves days and coaching Kevin Garnett and whatnot. But I even told Kevin Garnett that. And man, like Flip, you know, we knew he was a pretty good coach during that time, and we won a CBA championship. I felt at that time we were loaded full of guys that were deserving of a NBA shot. And we all got our shot. And that was great about the experience, but it started at Georgetown. It started from Coach Thompson, and that's what I love about my time at Georgetown. Coach has been great for a lot of players throughout his coaching career. And the strength of his coaching was just pushing you, being demanding, making sure that you had to work to be successful. And that's what I got out of it, you know. Of course, my time at Georgetown, I highlight Coach Thompson. But, hey, I met my lovely wife at Georgetown. Mm-hmm. Now we're sitting here with we have only one child, our boy, who's now a young man trying to make it in the NBA and doing pretty well right now as a young guy. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. I mean, yes, Coach Thompson was great at Georgetown, but I've had a lot of success and a lot of good times during my college career, and that was the springboard to what I did in the pros. But you're right, I had to keep it going. It was tough. And I'm trying to show that to my son.
Jaron, you're a modest guy. I have to bring this up. But you had to make a transition. And I know it wasn't easy. You went from John Thompson to our rookie year together. Basically, you got there before I came in to the Nets. But you were playing from, you go from John Thompson to Bill Fitch.
Right.
What kind of change was that for you in your career? Did it make did you see a difference? Did you notice right away the difference between college and the pros?
Yes, indeed, man. You know, in college, you can be a little tough on guys. Once you get to the pros, that atmosphere changes. I mean, it's all about feeding your family, man. Guys who are a little bit more, pro ball, it can be a little challenging. Everybody has a different I don't know if winning is always a priority for many of the guys. Honestly, I don't know if that's the priority. And if you remember that team, we were struggling. The Nets were a struggling franchise. We weren't winning. And so, but it was an opportunity. I had an opportunity to get some experience in the pros, make the team, establish some great relationships. And playing for Bill Fitch, it was just great. He had a tough time doing that stretch. He's a legendary coach as well in the pros. But those weren't the best of his coaching days. Everyone knows Bill from his days in Boston. But he's had some – after that time, it was a tough stretch. I mean, we're playing – with a fairly young team, I would say. There's some veterans on that team. I played with the likes of Sam Bowie was in later in his career. I played with some bright guys on that team and Purvis Short. I mean, these guys are old veterans, and I'm the young dude on the team. With Purvis, Roy Henson, man, Chris Morris was on that team at the time. Leon, who's a veteran. He's a veteran referee right now in the NBA.
Right.
I mean, guys don't even know Leon played ball. He was on the USA team. So, I mean, So I played with some veterans, which helped me. These guys helped me learn how to be a young man, make it in the world, and they appreciated my hard work that I brought from Georgetown. So, yeah, Bill Fitch was great, and that was the beginning. You're right. I had a number of different coaches throughout my time, from Bill – get the Flip, man. I had Rick Alderman, Larry Brown, you name it. You name the coach, and then finally, after years later, I get to join Coach Popovich with the Spurs. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. It was just, I've been blessed to be under the tutelage of a lot of different coaches, and it has allowed me to really shape my basketball acumen. I'm a coach for life playing under those guys.
Go ahead, Jan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm a coach for life, man. So y'all can just imagine that career and that path. That's what you call a true journey. And that journey, I said it from the beginning, man. If you guys ever go to my Twitter page or my LinkedIn page, you'll see I have this statement called "The Journey is Success," and not just winning a championship. It's the journey, the places you've been, the people you've met, That is what is the successful part. The people you have kind of reached out to and maintain a rapport with. That's what's exciting. So I would hope all these young millennials, you know, will sit back and listen to you guys and listen to all the experiences that you're sharing on the broadcast. I can just imagine. They should take it to heart. I've done that in the past. I don't know if I did it online or on the podcast. I think we did it more on just regular TV back in the day, D. I don't know. We just looked at some VHS. I watched on some old tape delay watching your brother play and whatnot, man. So I just hope they just take it to heart. We mean well, and I think all of us are basketball fans to heart. We love the game. We love to see it played well and play hard, compete. And if you don't do that, then we're disturbed when we watch it, you know, and it hurts us. So, but right now, the state of the game, we see it. It's great. It is great.
Tell me, Ricky, and I want Mike and Ricky to understand this part because they've been around the game a lot just as long as I have. And, you know, they know the game very well. And you go through a lot of ups and downs, you know, behind the scenes that a lot of the fans don't think about sometimes. All these years that I've been around you and we played and we had some rough times, you know, playing for Flip, failure was not an option.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had an off game, we were right back at it, and we were working hard, and I mean hard. People don't know the CBA was just like the global league today. And, you know, that was our trip, our avenue to the NBA. Tell me this, and this is very important to me. How did you stay so upbeat all those years, Darren? And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, man. We had some rough days with the Nets, and you always came to practice with an upbeat attitude. Tell me how you do that, man.
You know what? I just always loved the game, man. I wanted to play it, and I shared it with my son today. I want it when my motto is this: I do not want to insult the average person, the novice fan that's watching me play. So if you sat in the stands, and you were just some older person who never really paid attention to basketball, and you were asked to go and watch it. And you saw me, what you want to see is a guy that's enjoying playing basketball. I'm enjoying doing what I do. I'm doing it hard, playing it hard, and competing. But I love it. And it shows. And you know, when you see someone that maybe after the game, you know, you always get these people who walk up to you, man, great game. Hey, man, I love watching you out there, man. And that was that's what I always appreciated. I took that message and shared that with my son. Son, I don't care what happens on the court. When someone is watching you, not just the basketball mind, just regular folk, when they're watching you, they're new to you, new to the game or whatever, they spend their money. Don't insult them with your play. They know the game. They know it. They know about being competitive. They know about being competitive. Don't insult them by not competing and by not having fun out there, enjoying the sport. And that's what I did. So when I kept the practice every day, man, I was like, man, I want to just make sure everybody's at high spirit as best I could. I knew everybody else had other things on their mind. You know, they're worrying about getting cut. They're worrying about getting playing time, getting touches, you know, coaches on my case, all these different things. Man, every player got the different issues that they had. I never got caught up in that. I was like, man, let me just go ahead and just ball. I get some other dude having an issue. I hear you, man. That's not me. That's not me. I never said it. I never said it, D. I respect the position that another player was in. I'm like, I hear you, man. It's tough. Man. But now I got to go out here. I still got to go to work. I got to find a way to stay at this. And whatever I can do to keep my teammates, you know, upbeat, keep them interested in wanting to help us win, then I did that. If that meant cheering them on, high-fiving them. Like, look, man, every now and then I'll give them a good pass, make sure they're well taken care of, help them on defense. I was always a team guy. So that was my motto in the CBA. In the CBA, like, D, I played with you that year, but I also played with a number of different teams. You know, after that time, I mean, I still didn't go to the league. We both were grinding it out during that time. We were trying. I mean, I'm playing in the WBL, all these different leagues. I had a taste overseas. We got our butts kicked. You know, I've done all of that while still trying to prove that I can play a role on an NBA team one day. I hope somebody give me a shot. That's all we want. Give me a little shot at that. You know, so, and I finally got it, you know, slowly but surely. Finally got it with the Spurs. But, I mean, I had bounced around on the Clippers, the Blazers. You know how that career, man, that's tough. That's tough for a guy. Not a lot of young players can handle that. Not a lot of people can handle that, man. And it comes, you got to be hungry. You got to keep your spirit up. That's hard for a lot of guys. And, but I knew that at a young age, though. I knew that at that time. I knew it. I was like, well, shit, I mean, I'm competing. I'm actually competing against other guards trying to get a spot in the NBA. So, I mean, I'm helping you. I'm helping us win. And I hope the best for all of us. And I knew it wasn't going to be everybody. One of us, one, two guys may get a shot. I don't know. All of us played like we deserved a shot. And finally, I got it, man. So I think I carry that even now, D. As I reflect on those times right now, man, it's really good to talk to you, man, to be on the broadcast, to be able to share these memories. It's a beautiful thing, man. And I hope that those who are listening, it takes a lot of hard work. You got to remain confident and remain high-spirited and believe it in yourself, even through tough times or other people that's in your circle that may be having tough times. You got to believe in yourself. And you do that, I think you'll be fine. And then you take that. When you get a family one day, you tell your kids about that. And that's what I did. Sounds kind of simple, but I did that now, and I'm still doing that. I'm still doing that, man, to a little young dude that's now playing in the NBA. That's it. Just keep working hard, have fun out there, and let people watch. When they watch you, they see you having a good time out there. That is it.
Let me update our listeners, and then I'll get to Ricky and Michael before we get off the air. I want to tell everybody, I want to welcome you to my Derek Gervin's That's Good As It Gets podcast. I'm here tonight with my partner, Michael Robertson, and Ricky Hampton from the African-American Athlete. You can go to their site at any time, AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. These gentlemen do their shows every Tuesday, so I hope everyone starts tuning in because we're on our way to very big things. We have a partner on here, a friend of mine, former teammate of mine, Jaren Jackson, has been on the air talking about his flight from New Orleans and on his way up to the NBA. Jaren, just got a few more questions for you. I'm going to let these gentlemen get to you first, and then I got like one big question for you before we get off this air. Go ahead, Mike or Ricky.
All right. You want me to go, Rick? Okay. So, Jaren, you grew up in New Orleans, and like I said, you're around my age, so probably around the time we're 9 or 10, you had the New Orleans Jazz there, and then they move up to Utah. How heartbreaking was that to have your local NBA team move to Utah? And then, you know, later on as an adult, you see them get the NBA back in New Orleans. And what was that like?
Wow. You bring back the memories, man. I will say that I remember in high school, or maybe it was middle school. Maybe it was middle school. I remember where they were trying to get people to come to the game to see Pistol Pete, to see Aaron James. By the way, Aaron James went to Corn. For those of you are not millennials, but back in the day, you were the Orleans guy.
Okay.
Look, man, Aaron James was a bad boy, you know. I think maybe Artis Gilmore was on that team for a second. You know, we got my man who used to be with the Lakers, Gail Goodrich. He was on that team.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody wanted to go see Pistol Pete. I mean, they were struggling, but he entertained. He put on a show. He used to put that thing in the hole, like George Gervin, Derek Gervin, Gervin, man. He used to put that thing in the basket. So he put on a show. But he went through a tough stretch. But we entertained as young people. I mean, everybody wants to be Pistol Pete. So when the team left, I don't know if they were disappointed. I mean, I think the kids were a little disappointed, a little bit, but the team had been struggling. I think they understood it. So I think guys initially were disappointed, but they kind of moved on. You know, now everyone was a fan of the legendary Julius Erving and Dr. J. Time King Hester. It really didn't matter if the team was in New Orleans or wherever. Everybody wanted to be like Dr. J. You know, that's the way it was back then. So, yes, it was disappointing, but I think they moved on quickly. And I remember the Jazz moving on to Utah. It was strange. They had our colors, you know. I mean, I thought they would change the name. It just sounds funny, the Jazz and Salt
Lake.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that sounded funny. I thought they were going to change the name, man. I couldn't think of a name for Utah besides the Jazz, but we should have kept our name, you know,
right.
In New Orleans. That would have been cool. You know, I think Seattle's doing that. Like the Supersonics, they kept their name. They kept their name. So when a team comes back there, they're going to be the Seattle Supersonics. It's going to be that. So I think New Orleans should have done that. So that's a little disappointing. But people were hurt, but they got over it quickly. They got over it quickly. And I think the rise of the NBA helped with that. Julius Erving, Magic Johnson, Bird, you know, that helped. But you're right. The team had been struggling. Man, but come on. Come on, New Orleans. I wish y'all the best. I still got a lot of love for the New Orleans basketball. And the Pelicans. I got a lot of love for the Pelicans. Not that much love because I'm hanging out in Grizzly Land now with my son.
Right.
But right. I feel you, man. I have a little something inside of me for New Orleans and New Orleans basketball. So I hope the best for them as long as they don't beat up on the Memphis Grizzlies.
All right. You got a question, Rick? Big Rick?
Did he disappear? All right. Well,
you know, I have another one, Derek.
Okay.
So, Jerry, you were actually on the Fish That Saved Pittsburgh where you played the Pittsburgh Piranhas. So,
you went down there, man. Down that road. Pittsburgh Piranhas. That is great, man.
Just say Pittsburgh. But what was that like playing there, knowing that that movie was, you know, big when we were kids, and then you go play for the Bullets and, you know, in your college hometown. So what was it like playing pro ball in the area where you played college ball?
Man, first, let me think, man. I appreciate y'all going back to that time. You know what I mean? People got to understand, you know, what it's like to go through that grind and trying to make it in the NBA. Guys playing all over the place. CBA, WBL, WBA, ABA, these guys, everybody's going all over the place to get that shot. And that was my shot at that time, the Pittsburgh Piranhas. Who would have thought that there's a team called the Piranhas? Come on, D, you've been on a lot of teams. You're like, oh, what is this? The Piranhas. I got to put a Piranhas on my shirt? I mean, come on. So it was kind of fun. But it was a great time. It was a moment, you know, in my career where what was cool, I was with what's my man who used to own the team, part owner, who's the legend with the Indiana Pacers. He's on the tip of my tongue. Freddie Hooker.
Who is it?
From McKee.
Roger Brown?
Freddie Lewis. Huh?
Freddie Lewis?
Lewis?
Freddie Lewis.
Okay.
Freddie Lewis. Well, Freddie Lewis was at the time. He was affiliated with the Pittsburgh Piranhas at the time. You know, not people know that, but he was. Anyway, I believe it's the new thing. Pittsburgh Coronas. No, I'm mixing it up. No, I'm not. Not only did I play for the Pittsburgh Piranhas, I also coached in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Explosion. So I've been all over the place, man. So I coached there, and I played in Pittsburgh. I mean, come on. But anyway, the Piranhas were great. I think we played our games at, what's the school there?
Duquesne?
Where is this?
Duquesne?
The team. Yeah, the team played at,
No, I said Duquesne.
Right there.
Duquesne,
that's right.
Yeah,
we were at Duquesne. We were at Duquesne, that's right. It was, oh, man, it was great. We had great teammates on that team, man. We ended up, I think we already made it to the finals, but we lost in the finals. But there's a lot of good players on that team. And guys, again, that just was another stepping stone. Guys ended up going overseas from that team or playing another year of CBA ball on other teams and trying to make it. But it was Pittsburgh. I think we had a moment where we thought about the Fisher State of Pittsburgh. I mean, you can't help but think about Dr. J and the Afro or whatever. They tried to play that little theme during the games and stuff, the Fisher State of Pittsburgh game, you know. Kind of remind you of that movie Semi-Pro, you know,
right.
Where he always trying to do stuff to get people to come to the games at that level.
Yeah.
The trip to the train. They didn't come to the game to see Jerry Jackson and Jerry Gervin play. They just came there to see if the Fish to Save Pittsburgh was going to show up or something like that. Like, come on, man. So, man, it's kind of the life of the minor leagues, man. But, but they didn't really promote it like that. I'm trying to think. I think maybe today the team probably should have been the same name as the name
Pisces.
In the movie. What was it in the movie?
Pisces.
Yeah.
Pisces.
We probably should have been called the Pisces.
Yeah.
You know,
Pisces.
We probably should have been called that, man.
Hey, Darren.
Pittsburgh,
Darren, you played for some legendary coaches. From John Thompson to Fitch to Larry Brown to Pop, is there a link to what all those guys did to build successful programs? Is it one thing they all kind of focused on, or were they all just completely different in how they approached the game and their philosophies of the game?
They were different. I mean, I wish I could sit up here and tell you they were the same. You know, I mean, they all wanted to win, of course. They all tried to get the most out of their players. They all had their moments where they were demanding. But I would say they were different. And I think it's because of the players and the sign of the times. You know, I think back then players really wanted to be coached hard. I mean, I think not everybody, but most players. I think the coaches believed back then, you know, you had to get into somebody's grill. Give some effort. And I appreciated that at times. I didn't like it sometimes. I mean, I don't want to coach all in my face all the time, screaming and hollering. Relax, coach. Sit back and watch the game. But back then, you know, you had a lot of demanding coaches. Coach Thompson was that way. Coach Bobby Knight, Dean Smith. I mean, these are some legendary coaches, but I'm quite sure they didn't. That wasn't the case with every one of their players that they loved. Every one of their players was crazy about them. No. So, but they were all successful. And so I think today's players are a little different now. They're not. Some of the things that you did in the past, you can't do that with today's players. You just can't. You know, they're a little bit more, they're not as tolerant. You know, you got to be a little bit more relaxed. You got to be careful. And these coaches are trying to find creative ways to get the most out of the players. So that makes it challenging. I think Larry Brown was probably the last of the tough coaches. You know, Bill Fitch was trying to be tough. You know, just certain guys that, I mean, I had John Lucas. I love John Lucas in his day, guys. John Lucas is those who's sitting on the bench with the Houston Rockets now. Well, back then he had his one time. I played for him with the 76ers. And I will never forget, man. And I tell him this to this day. I said, man, you ran the heck out of us, man. You ran us more than Coach Thompson. I said, man, I ain't never been in such the greatest shape I've ever been in. And this is, I think it was before I got, I think it was right after my time you and I, Derek, were in lacrosse. I mean, this dude got me, I must have lost another 10 pounds. We were running sprints and shoot around. I mean, shoot around was brutal. I mean, so that was just a different coach. And I don't think a guy like John Lucas or Coach Thompson, these guys could get away with the things that they were trying to do in the past. So, yeah, coaches are different. They were all successful in their own way, but they're just different. I think they, many of them got to adapt to the times. If you can evolve, you can be successful for even longer period of time. You know, that's what I'm noticing. So, no, I would say that they're different. They're different, but successful.
Yeah.
Jared, did any of those guys motivate you? You went on to coach the National Basketball League of Canada. Did any of those guys that Ricky brought up, did any of those guys motivate you to start a coaching career?
Yes. I mean, they all, I can tell that they loved it. What I was, at the time, Derek, I was, you know, I knew I wanted to coach. I wanted to be player friendly. And I mean it in a good way. I mean, I played, so I knew the things that I did not want to hear from the coach when I played. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be a different type of coach. But I took a little bit from everybody that coached me. I mean, I thought Coach Thompson was a defensive-minded coach. He was focused on that. So I took that into my coaching. Larry Brown is one of the smartest coaches in the world. I mean, he loved practice. He participated in practice. I remember that. This guy here, he takes his shirt, he would strap his shoes on. The little white guy, man, try to get on the court trying to play defense against God. He wouldn't do that now, but at that time, I mean, Larry Brown, man, he loved practice so much, he would stay in the gym all day. And if you ever talk to
practice.
Him, he always talks about how he missed practice. He's not yet. He loved practice. That's why he had his moment with Allen Iverson. I mean, for Allen not to like practice, and the Larry loves practice, and they clash. Oh man, you talking about this? Larry was sleep in the gym doing practice, man. That's not AI. He told us all practice. You know, so it's kind of funny, man. But that's Larry. I took Flip Saunders, who is I believe he's a basketball genius. I mean, this dude had the playbook written in pencil at the time. Things have changed now. But at that time, he had that thick playbook. I will never forget 452. Never. I will never forget that. That's just a play call, guys. That's all. It's just a play. I will never forget. I call it something different in my own playbook when I coach. But I run the same play. I love it. So, but I took him, and then, of course, the legendary Coach Popovich. I mean, he put the icing on the cake, man. The guy, he was just amazing. And
Jared, I got to cut you off just for a second, and I'm sorry, but I have to. While you're on this subject, I have to bring it up. While you're talking about Pop. Flip, rest in peace. A lot of people don't know the similarities between Flip and Pop. And when I say that, right. I want you to explain to people. It was fun for us to go to practice every day in lacrosse. And
right.
I think I talk to kids all the time, and, you know, you have some people that don't think it's important, and then you have people think, I think it's very important, the camaraderie in the locker room, off the court, all the things that Flip instilled in us. We were a unit, and we had players that were close. Do you think that's important? Because you play with David Robinson and Tim Duncan and Sean Elliott, and it doesn't get much better than that on pro level. Do you think it's very important for a team to have camaraderie off the court?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, man. These guys got to – I mean, you got to want to be – you see these guys a lot. We're at practice every day. I see, when you're on a team, you're seeing guys every day. You see them more than you see your own family. So you have to have camaraderie. You got to be a cohesive unit. You got to be a level of respect for each other that you have. Yeah, and the love for each other continues to grow as you remain teammates, man. It ends up leading to a heck of a year. And that's how things were with Flip when we were there. And that's the similarity you had with Coach Pop. You know, Coach is he lets you do your thing. He can be firm. Now, Coach Pop, people don't think, maybe you hear about it now because he's a legendary coach over the years. But Coach Pop, even when he first got started, he was one of those guys that would get on your case, he's firm, but then he'll put you back in the game. You know those coaches that, you know, look over at the bench, you're like, man, oh, Coach going to take me out. I don't feel like hearing from him. He's about to get in my grill, and then he's going to bench me. That's not Pop. Pop was, he would get on you. I remember him taking me out the game. I mean, grilling me and put me right back in the game. It's like, do I really want to go back in the game? I mean, I do, but I'm already upset, you know what I mean? So I can't say he's not playing me. I'm getting done, but he just has those moments where, and he does that to this day. You'll see, if you're watching the Spurs, you know they're going through a rough stretch now, but he's still a coach at heart, man. He knows what he's doing, and he has a lot of love for all his players. He would get on them and then take them right out and put them right back in the game. He will. You have no reason to complain about playing time with Coach Pop. He would throw you out there. You better be productive. And that's his style, you know, and I kind of take that as a coach myself. I did that when I was coaching in the minor leagues and trying to grow as a coach. And I do that even to this day, man. So D. Gurk, what I'm doing now, man, I coach at high school, and I use those moments even in the high school level. And we basically taking stuff from our old basketball dudes that we've been hanging out with for years. And we take that, and it helps shape us when we're teaching young people. So we are students of the game for life. And we care to share that with young people. That's what we must do. We're obligated to do that, not just with your own kids. I don't do that with just with Jaren Jr. I got to do that with all young people that love the game and that are need inspiration. You got to do that. You got to do that. So that's what I'm doing, man. So all these coaches, I love them. I feel like that background, man, is going to stay with me forever. It's going to help me even more, man. So I love the game. Hopefully I can win some championships. Doesn't matter what level, man. I appreciate the game at every level, not just the NBA. I love college. I love high school. I love middle school. I love basketball, just to sit there and watch it and nurture young people and help them with the game. It's a beautiful thing, man. It is beautiful. So I can sit here and talk all day, fellas. I gotta go get to a Grizzlies game, man.
Okay.
Man, right. But it's awesome, man.
I have to tell you, man. We appreciate your time. I'm gonna let Mike and Rick say something to you first, but man, you already know how I feel about you. You're a godsend, man, and I wish your son well. And I hope you keep doing what you're doing in the community as well, man. I love you. I just wanted to have to tell you that.
Oh, man, much love to you too, D, man. Look, man, let me say this, bro. You know, a lot of guys don't know our story. You know, we played, we grinded out. When you go through the minor leagues, you know, and trying to, you know, establish yourself, man, it's a tough stretch. But what I tell a lot of these NBA players, even now, to this day, during that time, we played with some pros. There was some NBA talent on these minor league teams. I don't know if that's the case now. I mean, I also do the broadcast of the Fort Wayne Mad Ants games now, D. So I'm in Indiana. I do their broadcast as color analyst. So I get to see G League ball compared to when we played in the CBA. And man, we were some – we knew that someday we're going to get a shot in the league. That's all you can ask for as a minor league. Give me a shot. Somebody call me for a moment. From there, it's up to me. It's up to me. But during that time, man, we played with some talented players, and I've always shared, even in the pros, when I was at the Spurs, I'm like, man, some of you guys, but I played with some dudes in the minor leagues, man, that would kill y'all. It would kill y'all, man. I mean, these dudes got game. You know, so don't think because I came from the CBA, you know, that there's some chump change, right, that is going to be easy. No. No. And that's what I've respected about guys like yourself, D, and all the guys we played, man. D used to put that thing in the hole. I don't know if people understood it. You know, there was a lot of guys who could score that ball at that level that would have loved to do that for a long time in the NBA, but just didn't get the opportunity. There was a lot of dudes that could do it. I understood that. I'm like, all right, these guys can put that thing in the basket. And it's kind of tough. You go through, you're hearing all the little stuff about, man, you know, they ain't giving me an opportunity to get this other dude. You know, and it's hard. It's hard. So, but I'm just telling you, at that time, man, you were able to, I was a witness to what you did. I'm quite sure you learned that your brother was an influence on you. And we all are a fan, of course, of him. And what he's done. But one of the things, I don't know if I share this with you, man, but this is something I share with my son. The art of putting the ball in the basket. I'm not talking about going to a little shot doctor, or going to a shooting coach, all these different things that these guys are getting now. If you can put the ball in the basket, man, I'm telling you, then do that. I don't care how the shot looks. I do not care. I can tell if you got a good touch. And I could tell at years old. I could tell. I knew my son was like that as a young age. I didn't care how he shot the ball. And he gets that criticism now about his shooting touch or whatnot. I mean, come on, man. I've seen the best shooters. George Gervin, Alex English, Allen Iverson. I mean, names of guys that would not think of who can put that thing in the basket. Funny looking shots, weird shots. I don't care. Put it in the basket. And I took that in my teachings with my son. And now he just, you know, all he's doing is just throwing the ball up there. Dude, just put the ball in the basket, man. They make shooting
that simple.
So it's simple. The basket is right there, 10 feet. I don't care how many people watching. Can you put it in there? And today's big guys, they better learn that. I don't like seeing all this small ball I'm a small guy. I want to play with some big guys. I wanted to play with David Robinson and Tim Duncan. I don't want to be playing small ball. I did that in the CBA. I want to play with some 7-footers, 7 feet, 7 feet. I'm the small dude on the team. You know, so put the ball in the basket, man. But, D, I've always appreciated your ability, man, and I know you aspired to play a long time in the league as well, and you wanted to get there like your brother did, and you worked hard at it, man. And people don't know your story. I get it. Continuing to show that with being on the show and talking about the game, the love you have for it. I respect that, man, and I want to thank you, man, for having me on the show. Much respect to the guys, all the guys I played with in the CBA, the WBL, man. It was just a beautiful, beautiful time. It wasn't the most money-making time, but it was a time of just a good time to meet a lot of great people who loved the game. That's what it was, man. So I want to thank you guys, bro. You know, and keep up with Jaren Jr., man. He's trying to show
right.
Some skills, D. He's trying.
Well, we'll be supporting him, and I'll talk to you again. I hope to have you on the show again, man. You go ahead and enjoy your game tonight, and good luck to you guys.
D, man, thank you so much, man. I look forward to doing it again, man. You know me, man. Both of our careers, you could talk forever, man. Oh, we could sit here and talk forever. So enjoy it, man. Y'all be good, man, and happy holidays you guys.
Same to you, Jerry. Have a good night.
Thank you, brother.
All right, take care, fella. All righty, man. Y'all be easy, man. Peace.
All right.
Peace.
Well, Rick.
Wow, that was awesome, fellas.
It's been great.
Absolutely.
All right, until next time.
We're going to close down shop tonight, huh? Hey, Ricky, I wanted to tell you and Mike as well, every day is a holiday to me, and I know we got the big one coming up for the young kids coming up soon, but, man, I appreciate you guys. I've told you that many times, and I'm going to continue on as we go forward. So, man, I love you two guys, and I'm wishing you happy holidays. It's been a great night.
All right, well, we out of here, brothers.
Take care. Have a good one. All you listeners, thank you for listening in. Have a good night.